get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today we have Mohit Teda. And now Mohit manages and owns a company called Black Book Investments. He essentially takes, at the moment, millions of dollars from his investors and puts that into websites. And then he and his team manage and run these websites to bring an ROI back to the investors. Now, that whether that be cash flow or capital appreciation, it's kind of what they specialize in. They're also part of the Empire Flippers Capital Fund, where they raised over $1 million to do the same thing with investors there as well. So he's well-versed in this area. He manages at the moment with his Black Book Investments company over 30 websites and has a whole team running them. So we kind of dive into his processes, his team around that, how it works in terms of investing with him and Black Book Investments. So if you are looking for more of, I guess, a passive income play where you're not having to manage your own website and you can have someone in another team do that, then this might be something that you could look into. We actually dive into a little bit of the details there if you're interested. Essentially, you put money into escrow. They go and find a site for you, obviously, with your input throughout this process. And then once they've bought the site, they manage that site for you. And essentially, you're collecting all of the revenue from that site. So it's not like all the money's going into their accounts. Any of the Amazon affiliate or displayed revenue comes into your account and you're just paying a management fee from that. So it's an interesting investment play that kind of gives you a little bit of hands-off. So if you've already got a portfolio of sites, you don't want to add more, you want to kind of diversify that income a little bit and not having to put more of your time into it, this might be something that interests you as well. So sit back and enjoy.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
All right. Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today we have Mohit Teda. Welcome, Mohit.
Hi, James. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
No, thanks for coming on. So you've been on a few podcasts before. You've done the rounds a bit in the past, and I guess you're doing the rounds again now. So maybe anyone who hasn't listened to you before, you own and run a company called Black Book Investments. So maybe do you want to dive a little bit into your background, then maybe a little bit into what Black Book Investments does and what it is, and then we'll dive a little deeper from there.
Sounds good. Yeah. So I'm Mohit. I'm from a city called Jodhpur in India. It's also called the Blue City. And I'm calling from here today, by the way. So I've been buying and managing and growing websites for almost like a decade now. Started back in 2012, 2013, and started off with a small site. Today we manage multiple portfolios for ourselves, our clients, and investors. So yeah, I mean, I can give you a quick rundown of how I got here, if that's
yeah, sure.
Great. So yeah, I mean, right after college, I graduated in 2011. I worked a job for about a year with a startup and in their content team. And I was kind of decided that, you know, after 1 year, I'm going to leave the job and do my own thing. And I always wanted to do something that would allow me the time and location freedom and independence. We had all read like the 4-hour work week back then, you know, Rich Dad Poor Dad. And I was like, you know, I started, you know, while I was in the job, I started learning how to make websites, how to use WordPress, you know, in the evenings on the side. I was learning how to build websites. I was learning how to blog because that was the straightforward way of, you know, making money online. Like, because you always, you know, when you start, we Google make money online, and then, you know, blogging is the first thing that comes up. So like, let's try this. If it works, maybe. Unfortunately, that didn't work because I could not make any money by blogging 10 years ago. But I did learn some skills on the way, which is like, you know, building websites using WordPress, writing, and yeah, all of that. So that did make me feel that, you know, okay, this is possible. Maybe there's another way to it. You know, maybe it's not for me, this thing, blogging, like starting from scratch. So I came across Flippa, which is a marketplace for buying and selling websites. And someone introduced me to Flippa, and I could see that people are selling their websites and businesses for a multiple of their earnings. And back then, you could probably buy something for less than 1 year's worth of income. Even I bought businesses for 6x monthly profit. So I had some savings and borrowed some money from my parents and bought my first website for $2,500. It was a website selling social media services, marketing services. And I bought that for $2,500 and ran that for 6 to 7 months. And that did well for me. I made good money, like $6,000-$7,000 in the span of six, seven months. And I then sold it for $12,000 or so. So that was like, you know, my first validation that, okay, this thing works. I could make money while running it. I could make money when I sold it. So that was like a validation to all of this that, okay, this thing works. And then I just did it again. But a second time I got scammed, bought something for $3,000 and it wasn't what it was supposed to be or what it was portrayed. So that was a scam. But fortunately I had some money still, you know, with me. So I didn't lose hope. And I, third time around, I bought a content site running AdSense, and that's how I you know, worked my way to building multiple, like building portfolio myself, for myself first, and then of course others. The other split, how that came by, was I, like, with the proceeds of my first website I told you in 2013, mm-hmm. I, like, you know, had always wanted to go to New York and, you know, travel the US states. So I went to New York and then stayed with a friend of mine in Manhattan, Midtown. He was working at an investment bank, and we were, you know, I was there with him for a few weeks. He saw me, I was like working on my laptop all day, and he got curious, you know, what I was doing. And he asked me, like, what do you do? And, you know, how do you make money, whatever. So I told him that I buy websites and I run them and I grow them. So he told me that he had some money, some spare cash lying around, and he would like to experiment and maybe invest in a website and see how that works. So that's how the idea for Black Book was born. So we bought a website for him, and for $11,000, and I started managing it. So that one grew, you know, that did well. That website did well, and he got really interested. So we bought more sites for him. He got his friends and family involved, and that's how we started Black Book Investments officially in 2014. And then my like other friends of mine, they got curious what I was doing, and it just snowballed from there. So that's how Black Book started, basically. Currently, we manage over 30 sites for multiple investors. We're also managing portfolios for EF Capital program. We've done 2 rounds with them. There's of course my own portfolio, and then we have individual investors who we work with. And then there's another like fund or group buy that we do every year for Black Book, when people can pool in money. Like our investors, we pool money from multiple people and then buy bigger sites to make a portfolio. So yeah, that's where we are today.
Nice. That's funny. You obviously mentioned 4-hour work week in the beginning. I still haven't read that book, so I don't know if I'm maybe the only person that's it, because everyone who comes on this podcast, like, yeah, I started when I read that book. It's like, man, I think I was too young, that I didn't know anything about numbers. I didn't give a shit about that stuff then. So maybe I have to read it now. I don't know if it'll have any value now, but
finally, yeah,
maybe. Yeah. Finally get on the bandwagon. Yeah. But you obviously mentioned, oh no, you carry on.
Yeah, it's more about the inspiration, I'd say, you know, that it kind of gives you a kick in the butt. So,
yeah. For sure. But you mentioned about your own portfolio too. I'll bet you're interested in, are you, so you mentioned you still have your own portfolio now. Are you only acquiring and then building, or are you kind of building from scratch too?
No, we don't build from scratch. We do have my own portfolio, but that's like I've trimmed that down to, like a couple of sites now. It's mostly we do, and those are like old sites we've been running from like long back. Like I didn't want to sell them,
Okay.
so I
Yeah.
sold pretty much everything else. Now we manage mostly investor portfolios, and also a big chunk is with EF Capital, EFC 1 and 2, the first and second rounds. So
Gotcha.
yeah.
Okay. Well, let's dive a little bit into the black book investment stuff then. So obviously you're looking to acquire websites, you have investors. Essentially you've got investors you need to keep happy as well. So I want to dive into that side as well. But first, let's go into the processes of how you're looking to, or what you're looking for in a website to acquire, kind of like the green flags, and then maybe dive into things that will instantly put you off. So if there's anyone who's maybe interested in selling their site to you or someone else, then they can kind of get an idea of what you're looking for.
Right. So, I mean, we mostly do content sites at the moment, and monetized by affiliate income or display ads. So could be a combination of both, ideally a combination of both. We are trying to, like recently we're pivoting a little bit away from purely affiliate sites, I'd say that, and into like mixed monetization, which is display ads and affiliate, or just purely display ads. So that's what we're doing right now. In terms of other things we look at is the trajectory of the site. Like it ideally we like to buy sites that are growing, that have shown a solid and stable history of earnings and traffic, that are at least 2 years, have been on for 2 years. We don't buy like two new sites. That's the other thing. We like to go in like ideally in evergreen niches, so that even if they're like wider, we're still good with them because we have synergy, because we run multiple sites already in similar niches. So that way we can use our expertise in those niches to grow the site that we bought. So yeah, I mean there's not too many constraints when we're looking to buy, but yeah, I mean of course like all the basics, like it should not have been penalized by Google, it should not be on a downward trajectory, it should not be built on an expired domain or have like multiple 301 redirects to it. So all of those we tend to avoid, we try to avoid, like
Okay.
because this is like the groundwork we do, and there's a reason for that, because we just try to minimize the risk for investors, because I am here to provide an ROI to investors, and that's what my main focus is. So protecting downside protection of their capital is my first and foremost goal, and then close second is giving them the ROI that they're looking for. I'm happy doing like 20% or 15% instead of 30 or 25, but at not at this, yeah, but still, not at the stake of losing their capital, basically. So I keep it fairly safe with investors, because capital preservation is something I like to keep at the top. So yeah.
It's interesting you mentioned obviously you don't like buying sites that are built on expired domains or have the 301 redirects. Obviously that's I guess a big trend within SEO and niche website building now, people building on their aged domains or redirecting. Is it just because it's trying to minimize the risk of potentially being penalized by Google in the future? That's kind of just the reason you just want fresh
Yeah,
domains that have been built?
that's the only thing. Yeah, for myself, I could do all of those, like because I can take more risk. But it's just like to minimize risks. It's not like I'm against them, because if they're done right, then it's all good. Like I'm not like against them.
Yeah, gotcha. And then obviously you acquire a site, everything kind of meets your criteria. What are the first steps that you're taking to build these? Obviously, you can't just sit on them because obviously you have investors you need to bring money back to, so they need to build and grow. So what are the next steps you're taking then to start increasing the income on the site?
So when we do look to acquire a website, even in the acquisition process or when the site is in escrow, we make a growth plan for the site spanning at least 6 months, if not more. And right after we acquire that, we start getting into the growth phase and try to execute all the high level stuff, all the quick wins, all the low hanging fruit in the first 3 months, so that we can immediately increase the revenue that the site is bringing in. It could be, you know, implementing a new monetization method. Let's say if the site is not using display ads, we introduce display ads. Or if there's another affiliate program we can introduce, we do that. We also do CRO, like, you know, if articles, if buying guides don't have tables or, you know, CRO elements, we do that. So that's another, not a super quick or easy win, but yeah, it falls into that bracket. So we do that. We also look at optimizing old content. Like if something has been not updated for a long while, we try to refresh the old content. So that is in the 3 to 6 month time period. Other than that, of course, we plan for new content, which runs in parallel. So we have a content team that also plans for the new content in parallel to what we're doing already with the quick fixes on paid stuff. So then we start pushing, like at the 2 to 3 month mark after acquisition, we start pushing out new content, and that goes on for a few months. So, and after that, I mean, when we are reaching the end of the 12 months, before that, we do like outreach campaigns to try and, you know, get more coverage for the sites, to, you know, have other good sites linked to us in the similar or same niches that are relevant to us. So that comes after we have put out new content, that after we have done all the basics. So that's the last part. And then we let the site, you know, age and let the new content age for a while. And we also try and, you know, minimize expenses so that we can run the site on autopilot mode, not spend too much on it, and prepare it for sale. So ideally we hold the site for about 2 years, two to 2.5 years. That's the ideal time we hold it for.
Okay. Yeah, because you've obviously got a relatively big team. We'll come to more of the investor side in a bit, but you've always got a relatively big team, because you mentioned you have 30 sites that you're managing. Yeah. So I guess how does the process work? Maybe someone's running their own portfolio of websites, and, you know, obviously you need some kind of, I guess, project management within that, because you've got maybe editors, content, SEO, whoever that is. So you want to maybe run down, I guess, the workflow of how things work to keep 30 sites running well?
Yeah, sure. So we have very competent people in our team working with us full time. So we have about 18 to 20 full time people right now. Wow. And of course, we work with a lot of freelancers, contractors, writers, expert writers in their niche for the content bit. We also work with agencies for content, but we try to hire as many, you know, as much expert writers as we can to give out the best content. In terms of managing so many sites, like I don't do day-to-day anymore now. So we have project managers who head different teams. Like one team is for content. Their job is to get the briefs. They get the briefs from the other team, and then they get the content written by the most suitable writer or agency that they think. Yeah. Then the content comes back to them. They double check, they edit, they proofread. If everything is good to go, then we have like an uploading team then that does the uploads, because when you have 30 sites, you are uploading content constantly and a lot of it.
Yeah.
So that's why we have a team for that. So their job is to make sure that all the links are in place, all the affiliate links are in place, all the images are there, all the alt text, meta text, titles, all of that is there. So they upload the stuff, and then the site manager, project manager, they go and push out the article live. And the first and foremost team is the new content or whatever, like you want to call it, the SEO team, if that is what you want to call it. Mm-hmm. They do all the keyword research, they do the content planning, they decide the site architecture, like what silos the site should have, what categories the site should have. They also do the technical bit. So they decide, they make a plan for the new content, then they do the keyword research, they do the briefs, which is then handed to the content team. So we have multiple people in each team managing these teams, and collectively these teams can, you know, grow and manage portfolios of sites.
Gotcha. I'm going to assume you didn't start with SEO team, content team, just all of that. So maybe for anyone who's listening who might be looking to start their own team as well, I guess what was the first part of that team that you hired?
First part for that team was basically to do what I was doing, you know, day to day. Like, yeah. I know keyword research is the most important part and everything, new content planning. So, but you can only do so much, you know. Maybe you're able to do it for 3, 4, 5, 10 sites, but then I also have business you know, take care of, like, to grow Black Book as a business. So that was the first thing I hired for. And that took off quite a lot from my plate so that I could focus on growing the business. So I know it's difficult to let go, but, you know, I started from there right away. Some people might, you know, differ because they want to hold on to the keyword research part and all of that. But I wanted it to be like a system from the beginning and, you know, without my dependence. So I hired for that part first, which could first replace me to quite an extent. And then I started putting more people in place to assist that person. And then the team got, like, it was very organic. And it was, you know, over a time of we had a lot of failed experiments. We had a lot of failed team structures. I'd say we are still evolving, but there's no right way to do it, honestly.
Do you want to maybe dive into some of those failed team structures? Like, I guess, what made them fail and what was kind of the setup there?
Yeah, I can give a very simple example. You know, earlier we thought maybe we can only hire site managers, and these site managers do everything A to Z related to one, two, or three or four particular sites. Okay. So we thought that will work. So if we have four sites, or let's say one manager can manage five sites. Then when we start getting more sites, we'll hire another manager and they can manage another five sites and so on and so forth. But how that failed was because if someone decides to leave, then these five sites that they were managing are orphaned and no one knows about them, what was going on with them, you know, what stage were they in, what was being planned for them, all of that. So this was a failed experiment because that clearly didn't work out because luckily for us, like, people didn't leave, but, you know, we figured that, you know, this probably won't work because if someone's not there, they leave. Even if someone is on leave for like 2 weeks, you know, who's going to monitor those sites? So that didn't work. So we decided, you know, let's have individual roles where we define certain tasks that are to be done by a certain person. And we can have backups for that role. So person X does keyword research, new content planning, brief creation. And then we have someone assisting them who is fairly good, maybe not as good as them, but fairly good at, and working with them on the same sites. So that if person X does decide to leave or, you know, takes a break, then person Y who was assisting them, they can step in and, you know, continue managing the sites. So we have roles, we define them by skills, and then we hire for these skills because finding site managers was not easy in the first place, by the way, because people who know how to run sites A to Z, they're doing it themselves, by the way.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, a lot of people, I guess, will be managing their own kind of portfolios and having to split their time with, especially if they have to do everything as well.
It's still difficult to find the right people for this role, to be honest, you know, because most people who are good, they're doing their own stuff. So,
Yeah, for sure. So obviously you mentioned how you got someone to take the keyword research off your plate first. Was that the thing that you saw was taking the most of your time right before running the business that you could outsource with, so you could grow the business? Or was it just that thing that, you know, you wanted to take off your plate just because maybe you didn't enjoy doing it or something like that?
It's not about as much about doing it. My focus was to grow the business, honestly. And I wanted to hire someone, you know, who was really good at, let's say, keyword research, new content planning. I was good, of course, but I thought maybe let's hire the best people for that, you know, and have them do it. So it's not about, you know, sometimes we think we're good at something, but you really aren't because there are other smarter people out there. So I'm all about hiring really smart people and putting them in the right place, giving them the right tools and the right team to support them and having them run the show so that I can focus on growing the business, basically. So yeah, my aim was to, you know, focus on growing the business. And for that, I had to take some things off my plate that I was doing and give them to maybe someone more competent so that they could, you know, do it better. And then they told me that, you know, this is, okay, I'm facing problems here, I'm facing challenges here, so maybe we can hire for this role. So then the team grew one by one, and we hired people as we started managing more sites.
Nice. Well, let's pivot a little bit into the business itself for Black Book. So do you want to maybe run down from the investor side, kind of, I guess, what the investor gets out of investing into Black Book investments in terms of, I guess, ROI, how much they need to invest, kind of all that.
Yeah. So it's fairly straightforward, you know. When someone comes to us and they are looking to invest in websites, they earlier they had just one option, which was, you know, invest into a site directly, buy a site directly for them, one-to-one management. So I would tell them, hey, the minimum to work with us is $100,000. For that money, we will buy a website for you, and then we will manage it for you. You don't give the money to us. We, like, their money goes directly into escrow and to the seller. It doesn't come to us. We just charge our fee, which we invoice the client for. So the minimum was $100,000. It used to be $50,000 before, but yeah, since like 2019 or 2020, it's been $100,000 because the multiples have gone up and you don't get much for 50K these days. So the prerequisite to work with us one-on-one is that you should have $100,000 to invest. Like, we're a little flexible, but yeah, that's like the range. So when you have that amount, you give us the go ahead, then we go about and look for the right site for you to buy, depending on whether you're looking for a capital appreciation or looking for just cash flow. So we present the investor with options that we're looking at, and these are pre-vetted options. We don't send them anything and everything. We do a preliminary vetting for these sites, and whatever we like, we send it to them. If they like anything, they tell us, hey Mohit, I like this one. Once they tell us, we go deeper into those sites and try to do, you know, more due diligence into those sites, talk to the seller, get on calls, all of that. And if everything checks out well, we negotiate on the behalf of the investor, the client, and then get the deal done. And we get the migration done to our servers and everything. And from there on, we start managing the site for the investor, for the client. And it's totally hands off for them, you know. Even if they don't want to have a say in what they want to buy, it's all cool. Like, we just show them what they're, you know, what the options are, and if they have any preference, because more often than not, they would not know what site is good or what is bad. We just present them with our analysis of those sites. So that is how the one-to-one thing works. We charge a 10% finder's fee on the buy, and we try to save you more money by negotiating on your behalf. So you still end up paying less if you would have done it yourself.
Yeah.
And then we start managing the site for you as an investor, and we charge a monthly fee for that. So that's a fixed retainer that depends on the size of the site, the work involved, all of that. So we do custom for every client. So it remains hands off for you. You get a report every month with what we did, what we're planning to do the next month, what we achieved, what the site made, what was the ROI, and all of that. And then we do quarterly payouts. Like, actually, we don't do payouts. We used to, but we switched. So now everything is owned by you. The site, the domain, everything is owned by you. You have the domain in your hosting. Also, you can choose yourself if you want. But we have our secure dedicated server, which we prefer to host on. But we do send you a backup of the site so that in case, our team, you know, vanishes off the face of the earth one day, so you still have domain and site files. So, you know, so there's nothing lost there. You are in control, total control, and you get the money from the from Amazon or from MediaVine or whatever ways the sites make money. You get that. We invoiced you for our fee, basically. So that's the one-to-one. The other thing, you know, we recently introduced in 2020 was a group buy, which is basically for people who do not have $1,000 lying around and they still want to invest in websites. So we reduced the minimum to $25,000, and we said, okay, there are a lot of people who have, you know, lesser money, less than 100,000, but they still want to invest in websites. So we pulled money from multiple people, 25K each, or 25K and above, basically. Someone puts 30, someone puts 50. And the first one we did was we pulled about $450,000, and we bought 3 or 4 sites using that money. This way, it gave a chance to more people to invest in websites. And also, their risk was better hedged because the money was spread across multiple sites and not just one site.
Yeah.
So this worked well for us, and we did another round this year. We just continued to raise more capital in that pool and add on more sites to that portfolio. So now we have that option too. If you're not, you know, looking to invest too much, or if you just want to get your feet wet, you know, you can start with as low as $25,000. So yeah, that's the second thing. Gotcha. These are the only two offerings that we do. Yeah.
You mentioned, obviously, you present to the client, you know, do they want a capital appreciation kind of site or a cash flowing site? How are you kind of differentiating that in terms of the sites you're buying?
Good question, actually. It's actually very simple if you think about it. So with capital appreciation, we do have to get a little bit less safe. I would not say risky, but less safe, I would say. These sites that we look for them would need to have a lot of upside potential. You know, they should not have covered everything in that niche already, because then there won't be anything for us to write about. Yeah. So they should have a potential to be, first of all, they should have a lot of quick wins. And then secondly, they should not have covered the niche, you know, completely. There should be still a lot of scope to grow in that niche, maybe shoulder niches. It should be a semi-wide niche, not like super narrow, because in that case, again, we're limited in the in terms of growth. So those are the things we look for when we're looking for more capital appreciation. Whereas if you're looking about dividends, you know, and like, you know, more about like a, getting a monthly passive income, stable income, then we look for sites that might not have that, those, you know, low-hanging fruits, or that might not have the super scope of growth that we would look for otherwise. But then they have a solid history of earnings, like not just 2 years. We're looking at 4, 5, 6 years, you know, solid, stable history of earnings and traffic. That way, you know, we know that, okay, the site has performed well in the past and hopefully it will keep performing the same. And of course, we do things to grow that site also. It's not like they don't get capital appreciation. Yeah. It's just that they won't get 2 or 3x, you know, in a year and a half or 2 years. It's more about like, you know, growth by 20-25% every year that way. So it's still capital growth, but at a slower pace, which is still higher than what a lot of other instruments of investment provide. Yeah. But the focus on those would be to give them a good ROI so that they can have a passive income that way. And historically, we've been able to achieve 29-30% ROI for our investors over the past 8 years that we've been working with investors. So, the lowest been 15%. Oh. Yeah, the lowest has been 15%.
I was going to say, I guess, how do you guarantee? Obviously, sometimes earnings and Google and things can kind of be up and down throughout a year. So I guess, how do you explain that to maybe an investor? Hey, maybe these months might not be so good, etc. And make sure you still deliver on that ROI maybe a year, 2 years down the line.
Yeah. So a lot of investors we work with do not have much idea about the industry. Some do, like they have read up about websites and investing in websites, but they haven't done it or they haven't run the website on their own. Like we have a doctor as an investor. He's a doctor, you know, based in Texas. He hasn't done websites, but he had been researching about investing in websites, and then he came to us. So we only work with investors who know about all the risks involved in the business, with the business, with this kind of business model. If they don't know the risk, we, of course, explain it to them. We try to get them up to speed of what all can go wrong. You know, only after that, only if they're okay with taking those risks, and then only then that we, you know, take them on as a client. We also refuse a lot of clients because of this, because they don't know about a certain risk, like, you know, maybe a Google update penalizing websites, or Amazon, you know, just slashing commissions one fine day. So if they don't know about all of these, and if they're not okay with all of these, we don't take them as a client, you know. So it's not like, you know, you can you know, hire us right away, because we need to be a fit also, because this is not for everyone. I repeat, this is not for everyone. This is for people who either understand or this industry, or are in the industry in some way or the other, have less time and more money and they want to do it passively, or people who have kind of, you know, invested in other instruments before, you know, all of like, you know, stocks, bonds, real estate, all of that, and they're looking to diversify further with alternate assets. So for them, like if you have 100,000 only to invest, I would refuse to take your money. I would not say that, you know, invest in websites. You know, get your basis covered first. This is a risky investment. And that's why we say high risk, high reward. So, yeah.
Okay. Does your, I guess, management fee increase as the site grows as well?
No. So for the sites that, so the management fee depends on the size of the site when we buy it. We don't usually increase it as we grow the site, honestly. We do take part in the upside when we sell the site. So let's say we bought a site for $100,000 and we were able to grow it to a certain level, let's say 2x it, and we sold it for $200,000 in 2 years. After all the expenses and everything, we split the upside, the capital gain, we split equally with the investor.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense. And then I guess the other thing as well, do people ever not want to sell the site and just kind of want you to continue managing it for continued cash flow for years on end? Is that something that you guys, I guess, are experiencing now?
Most people, I'd say, you know, because once they see that the money coming in every quarter, in fact, every month now, because it hits their bank, they think that this thing works. Most of our investors, most of our clients, they start off with one site because they're like hesitant, they have their reservations. But when they see this stuff working in like 6 months, 9 months, a year, they want to do more sites. They want to buy more sites. More investors, I'd say 70, 80% are keen on just continuing with the cash flow. Unless I advise them on selling a site, you know, which could be in a case that we have kind of maxed out or we're close to maxing out a site or we think that maybe this is not the best niche now to be in. Otherwise, 70, 80% of our investors, they just want to continue, you know, with us managing the site. But some, like 20, 30% do want a capital appreciation and they have like a timeline. Like, okay, we want to do three sites in these 2 years and then we grow them, we sell them and we do it all over again. So, yeah.
Nice. And obviously you've got a big fund, that ES Capital, I guess, fund. Do you want to maybe dive into what that is, what it stands for, just everything about it?
Yeah, sure. So EF Capital, Empire Flippers Capital, is a program that the Empire Flippers guys are doing. They've been doing it for like almost more than 2 years now, started in 2020, sometime in 2020. The first round happened in 2021. The second one happened in late 2021, early 2022. And the third one also happened in 2022. I took part in the first one and the second round. So how that works is basically EF Capital, they connect operators and investors. They don't connect per se, but they are serving investors and operators in the sense that they have a lot of people who want to invest in websites. They have a lot of inventory on their marketplace, but these people, they have the money, but they don't have the expertise to run sites. And on the other hand, there are operators like us who run and grow websites for a living. So they saw an opportunity there, you know, like why not be the bridge between these two, between this capital and these operators? So what they do is they raise money on our behalf, each operator, you know, like four or five operators to a round. Each operator is doing a different kind of deal. Like some are doing e-com, some are doing content display ads, some are doing content affiliate. So we have all our, you know, operator pages and the deal listed out on their site. And then people can, investors can come in and invest whatever amount they are looking to invest, with certain amount being the minimum. I think it was 10,000 per deal and like 30, 40,000 at least in total. So these investors come in, they are clients or would be clients of EF, and they've been looking for sites to buy, but they don't know how to buy and run a site. So now they can invest in operators like us and have us manage and grow their sites. So EF raises the money on our behalf. It's pre-decided how much we're looking to raise, like maybe 1 to 1.5 million. The deal is open. People start investing money into the deals. Once the round is closed, let's say in a month or 2 months, and whatever amount we have raised, then we go about and look for sites to buy for that round, for that fund. And right now we only buy from Empire Flippers, and we create a portfolio for that round, and then we manage it. We don't know who the investors are, or we don't get to interact with them. That's a good thing in a way that we can only focus on finding the best sites and then growing those sites. And all the management and of investors, all the raising of funds, all of that is taken care of by Empire Flippers. We just come in, find the right sites, and then acquire them and then grow them. So yeah, so we've done two rounds. So we raised about one million the first one and 1.5 million in the second one.
Wow. What's the actual end goal of the EF Capital Fund? And obviously, it's basically BlackRock Investments, but I guess you could say on a larger scale in terms of investment overall. Is the goal for those funds just to buy websites and then sell them to bring the investors capital, or is it more of a cash flowing thing? Like, how does that work?
It's a mix of both, I'd say, you know, just provide the highest possible ROI to investors. But we do have a certain timeline. Ideally, we would keep sites for 2 to 3 years, and we'd exit by the third year tops. So anytime between 2 and 3 years, so that the cycle is complete. So they keep getting quarterly payouts after whatever the carry that is paid to us, some part to EF, and then investors get about 67% of the profits. we get a, I can actually break it down for you. The investors get 67%. So let's say we bought two sites for $1 million in the first round and they're cash flowing a certain amount. Okay. Now, let's say after every quarter we do the accounting, we see this was the profit after whatever some expenses, the growth expenses and everything. This was the profit for that quarter. Now, 67% of that is paid to investors. And we as operators also have to put in money to be a part of EF Capital program. Mm-hmm. So we put in anywhere from 5 to 7%. So if for a 1 million round, I ended up putting in about $60,000-$70,000 in the first round, personally, basically. So we get ROI. We get ROI for that also as an investor. So 67% of the net income is distributed to investors. Then I think 10% goes to EF Capital, EF. So that's 77%. 3% goes to advisors of EF. These advisors help us find the right deals, vet the right deals. You know, we can talk to them and we can get their ideas on the deals that they're looking at. So that's 80%. And the rest 20% goes to us as for being an operator to grow the sites, gotcha. To operate the sites. That's how the breakup works.
It's a smart move by Empire Flippers. So obviously you have to buy and sell on Empire Flippers as well, right? So they also get the fee for the buying and selling?
Yes. For now, we are restricted to Empire Flippers. Let's see if they change that in the near future. I think they do have plans to, you know, spin off EF Capital as a separate entity. And I think they're raising money for that. So you can check it out. And after that, EFC will be a totally new entity. Maybe they might rename it too. And then I think we'll be able to buy from other places too, but even private deals, even off-market deals. So I think they did the validation with the three rounds, and now they're, you know, going about and they validated it. Now they want to create a company out of it, which is very smart.
Gotcha. I guess as well, from an investor standpoint, do you ever have to, I guess, take into consideration or accommodate maybe an investor's, I guess, wants or needs on a website? For example, maybe they don't want to build links just randomly or something like that, or they don't want certain things done. Are there things that you are willing to accommodate, or are there things you're like, okay, you know, we can't do that, you know, for whatever reason, because we need to grow, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm okay accommodating any, like, you know, reasonable things, which I think are okay for them to ask. Actually, no one has asked me for any restrictions, to be honest, like so far. Okay. So I haven't gotten to face that situation yet, but yeah. If it's reasonable, if it makes sense, I'd appreciate that, and I'd be okay complying to that. But if it is not, then I can maybe explain it to them why it is not good for the site, why we should, you know, do it and not that way.
Yeah.
So yeah, but I haven't faced a situation yet.
Yeah, no, fair enough. Now, and I'll dive a little bit down, a little bit of that off page stuff too. So you obviously mentioned in that last, like, I think it was six to twelve months further, you're looking at doing outreach for your websites as well. So I guess some people, is obviously two camps. If you're active on Twitter or with an SEO, don't build links, increase the risk of, you know, whatever it is, but obviously you're doing it and you're doing well. So maybe let's dive into, okay, what are you looking for when you're doing your outreach with your links, and then into the criteria of maybe the website, and then I guess, how are you structuring the links to the site? So what pages, and then maybe stuff on anchor text, you know, are you looking more branded? Are you looking for exact match keywords? Maybe you want to dive into some of that.
Yeah. To be honest, like I don't take care of the that outreach division at all. Honestly, like that was, you know, done by the current project managers, the current managers, you know, they got that team up and running, and gotcha. I was happy they were able to do that. But yeah, I mean, in general, the idea is to promote the content, you know, and hope in the hope that it gets linked to, you know, we don't focus so much as to the anchor text, from what I know, that might, you know, we have discussions with the team, but more so on providing value so that even if you're linking from some website to some page on our site, it should be a logical connection, you know, if they're reading about X things, you know, the page that they land on our site should not be about Y, it should be somewhere kind of close to X only. So that way, doesn't have to be, you know, branded, or doesn't have to be to the homepage, but it's more about promoting content on the right sites, on bigger sites. And even not just bigger sites, I'd say on sites that are relevant to what we are doing. Yeah. So that way, you know, the readers can get more value. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, that's fair enough. And then obviously within your content team too, you've obviously got different kinds, I guess, of content, listicles, info, bio, whatever it is. I'm assuming, do you have specific SOP, I guess, templates for each of those? And maybe do you want to, if you, I guess it might be a while since you've been in with the content team, but maybe just list out maybe how you used to do it at least, or how you do it currently, with maybe how you lay out some of your info content or listicle, or even some of your buyer intent, I guess, content.
Yeah. So, I mean, we do follow a lot of methods from, you know, the authority, AH Pro guys, Authority Hacker Pro guys.
Yep.
They have good templates, I'd say. Matt Diggity, Affiliate Lab. We follow the best content, you know, that is there, you know, Income School, all of that. But then we modify those templates to suit our needs or to suit the needs of the particular website. You know, some, these might not be one size fits all. So maybe they fit them 80%, but the rest 20% we modify, you know, so that, and also, you know, we work with a lot of experienced writers. So they at times give suggestions on how to structure content for that particular site or that niche. So that also helps a lot. But we do have like templates to, you know, let's say product X versus product Y, buying guides, you know, best of this, or just normal info articles. So we do have 4 to 5 different templates, but then we do modify them for each site to suit the needs of that site.
Gotcha. What do you have an example of what kind of things you would modify on a template based on the niche?
Let me think about it. So let's say if a niche is something, you know, that is not tech savvy, let's say they are not, you know, good with computers, or it's a niche that, you know, is good with the older people maybe, then we might not have too many distractions. Let's say too many, you know, call to actions, or we might not have, okay, you know, too many tables or stuff like that. I'm just giving an example, you know, off the top of my head. So that way, so it's not too heavy a modification, but yeah, we just increase or decrease the frequency of some elements that way.
So, for
example, we have, yeah. Go ahead, sir.
No, I was gonna say for that example then, so if you had maybe a niche for an older audience, you might make the page less design heavy with tables and stuff. It's more just kind of text and
more text, more content. And say, we actually do that for a site that's geared towards kids. You know, it's about facts, okay, or, you know, animal facts and different facts, and it's aimed at kids. So those are, you know, simple text with just images. That's all.
Yeah.
It's a display ad site. And then the text is like large. It's not like small font, it's large font. Mm. So, you know, the template doesn't work there. So we just text, image, that way.
No, okay. That's the first I've actually heard of, I guess, changing, I guess, the way, I guess, your articles are presented just based on almost the niche you're in. That's interesting.
Or the audience, yeah.
Or the audience. Okay, no, that's really good. And then I guess one of your easy, you obviously mentioned with the text being bigger on the kids side, that's one of your easy wins as well when you're looking for display ads to increase the font size on those sites?
Yeah, it is, but it won't work with all the sites, you know, because us reading, you know, text, big text as adults, it won't float the boat, you know, it'll look out of place. With kids, it actually works well. So it's like a double win for us, you know, we can space out the content more and we can have more ads, but at the same time, will provide a better reading experience to those kids because the font is bigger that way.
Is the kids niche actually quite lucrative in terms of display ad revenue? Yeah, because I'm assuming the ads will be just targeted more towards the parents on those. I'm not sure.
So it's not like super, super great. It's not bad either. I mean, it's like normal. But yeah, like one of our sites is really like an authority, like a mini brand. So, you know, at times we would see 30, 40 people logging in all at the same time, you know, to the same page. Then we realized that maybe it's some teacher teaching their kids and, you know, having them go to that page, you know, at the same time. And they're like reading through the page all together at once. So
that's awesome. And it's like 30 people giving you ad revenue at once.
Exactly. Yeah.
Have you thought about, obviously you mentioned, obviously you're doing display ads, affiliate marketing. So for a site like that, kids site, maybe, have you thought about doing more, I guess, branching into other forms of monetization, like digital products or even physical products within that? Or is that just too much, I guess, management that you need to do for, from an investor standpoint.
Yeah, we are actually experimenting with worksheets on that particular site by having people download free worksheets. And then maybe if they want to download more than a certain amount of worksheets, then they have to pay for it. So we're experimenting with that right now. Okay. But it's all about ROI for us. If it takes too much work for too little ROI, we'd rather not do it. Yeah. So we do explore alternative forms of revenue, but not going super out of our way or spending too much on it just to get like a little addition to the revenue. Because again, when I think of doing anything, I also think as an investor, because A, I am an investor, at least for the EF sites, and B, because I'm serving them, I'm working, you know, for the investors. So I got to think like them that, you know, would this make sense to the investor, to the ROI that they, I can give to them.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. So I guess, I think I've pretty much asked you everything that, that I had on my mind around Blackbook, but there might be people that want to invest with you in Blackbook Investments, or even maybe get in contact with you potentially to write for you or whatever it is. So do you want to maybe just give the audience how they can contact you and maybe potentially get involved?
Yeah. I mean, you can just Google my name, Mohit Dater. You can find me on Twitter, Facebook, or just email me at Mohit, M-O-H-I-T, at bbi.xyz. Mohit@bbi.xyz. Just email me. Yeah.
Perfect. I'll throw that in the description. Maybe I'll get you to send me that email too, so I can put it in there for you. But thanks for coming on. Thanks for your time in. I know it's getting a little late for you there now, after nine there for you. But thanks for spending the time and coming on and talking about your business here. And hopefully maybe you pick up a few investors along the way.
Been a pleasure, James. Thank you for having me.
No, thank you.
Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you're listening. Until the next episode, goodbye.